In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
And then I should hit the record button. And it should record, which it is.
Oh.
Bless me.
You couldn't have done that before?
No, I didn't have to go then. Okay, we're finished watching our funny cartoon videos. So, here we are. Welcome to episode, the Magical Talking Hat podcast, available in mono. The only podcast that just finished recording an episode of the Magical Talking Hat podcast minutes ago.
Minutes. Mere minutes.
And I'm confident this time that we are really the only podcast who did that.
Yeah.
I don't think any other podcast recorded an episode of our podcast.
Just really. Minutes ago.
Yeah.
But, of course, to the listener, it's been a whole week.
It's been a whole week. How was your week, listener? Tell us.
Well, that's a pretty fun-filled week right there.
Honestly, I'm too scared of the cops to do some of that.
Yeah.
But...
Well, I just wouldn't do it anyway.
Well, yeah, you... Yeah, in fact, that kind of thing is a thing for you.
I'm not even really sure what they were talking about, but you'll explain it to me later.
Yeah. And yeah.
Or maybe you shouldn't.
You
know what, don't.
It's a mature concept.
Yeah, just forget about it. Don't explain it to me.
But I gotta say, I'm way more impressed with our listeners. I didn't think they had it in them, or... on them, or
yeah,
all, under them.
Maybe we should change the subject. This is episode. This is episode 49.
7 squared. Our highest square yet.
That means that in just 3 more episodes, we will have completed a whole year cycle.
Theoretically.
Wow.
Our actual anniversary is St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, but then we're starting the new year.
Yeah. Let me look here. Let me look.
Technically, that would be. The first episode.
Well, okay.
Should be episode
53. This episode is the 16th. We don't know that, but.
Well, yes, we do.
So this is the 16th. Okay, so 50 is going to be on the 23rd. And 51 is on the 1st. 52 is on the 8th.
That's right.
So then 15th. Yeah, so it'll be the Thursday right before St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
So that'll be like our. Ta-da!
The first. Show of the next year's cycle
will be after St. Patrick's Day.
No,
52 will be our first of the next year.
53 will be our first show of the next year's cycle,
and that'll be after.
It'll be before St. Patrick's Day.
No, 49.
Because didn't you say that on the 15th, St. Patrick's Day is the 17th?
Hold on. Today, this is 49.
Yeah.
50. 51. 52. Yeah, 53 will be on the 15th.
On the 15th. So
that'll be the first.
Very first show of the New Year's cycle will be 2 days before St. Patrick's Day.
The irony? The humanity?
16th. So
it's 15th.
No, it's the 16th today.
Yeah, it's not, though.
But it is. To the listener.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Episode 49.
Yes.
Takes place.
Entitled... The shadow that walked through the moss.
Whatever. At 6:49 p.m. on February 16th, 1969, I was born.
Really? 6:49?
Yep. That's what the birth certificate says.
Like, okay, here's the thing. I think a lot of babies, like, even if you count, like, only from when they're crowning to... I think head to toe, getting the whole thing out, takes more than 60 seconds in a lot of cases.
Mm.
So, Is it literally like you don't count as being born until your little toes come out?
I don't know when they counted it. I just know. Birth certificate says 6:49 p.m. February 16th, 1969. Today, as the listeners listen to this, I am 43 years old. And if they're listening to it, I don't know when you're going to post it, though.
Probably earlier. Yeah, probably earlier. A little bit. Only a little bit earlier, probably. So right around that time. So, shall we all sing? Okay, you guys start.
No.
No, they chose a really bad key. I can't hit that. But no, this is the thing. Are you going to sing?
I'm not into the singing. I don't know why we're singing. I came out...
It's William's birthday.
Just to clarify... Next
week. Week later.
Exactly how many births you've been present at.
You
would have this kind of information.
I haven't been present. I'm saying I believe...
I was present at one, and I don't know when they determined. No. I'm sorry. I was present at more than one because I was present at my own. But I was. I was present at one other than my own, and I still don't know when they decided when the baby was born.
You're sitting there going, "What time is it?" No, but this is. Here's the thing.
I should have asked though.
This is why I think it has to be when the toes come out. What? Here's why. Just listen to me. Because before that point, everyone in that room is way too busy to check the time. Like when the head part just comes out, you can't be stopping and looking at your watch and writing that down.
Well, and it's not like they didn't round it, you know, 6:49, like they knew exactly
they didn't
when
say
it was.
7-ish.
Yeah, so.
That'd be awesome. Birth certificate said ish on them.
But
yeah,
yes,
so
I have been present to one other birth. And
did the mother know?
Yes.
And did the doctor know?
Yes.
Okay, how about the baby? Probably not.
The baby no, probably didn't know. But I didn't even ask. Like,
he just walked in?
No, I didn't ask how they determined what the birth time was, you dummy.
They said time of birth. 7:12, and you said, "How do you know that?"
You're such an idiot.
And they said, "Dude, there's a clock right there."
When I was in Kentucky following that physician around, I think I told this story to you.
Oh,
before.
Yes, the physician.
He asked a woman if I could observe the labor and the birth, and she was okay with it. And I talked to her beforehand.
Uh-huh.
And it was
so you could put a human face on human birth.
No, I just wanted her to be comfortable with it and everything. I mean, I was 17.
So what was that like for you?
You know, that it's interesting. I think this is the first time anyone's asked me about it since then. And
that's crazy.
It was after it was over, it was just like amazing. I mean, you're just completely amazed. I know that when people think about it as a concept and they're not there, it seems kind of weird and maybe gross and all this other stuff. But when you're actually there and it's happening, you know, anything like that is completely, you just don't even, you know what I'm saying? You're watching a person enter the world. It's so, I can't even put it into words because it's when it's over, it's like you feel so almost euphoric, like you've just witnessed a true miracle. I mean, that's what it was like for me.
Okay, see, because I feel like maybe that's like bullshit.
No, it's not at all.
Well, no, I'm going to explain. But it might not be, it might just be a Williamism, or I might be wrong.
Well, you think I'm not telling the truth?
No.
Or that
no,
I'm
no.
not remembering it the way it actually happened? Or?
Possibly.
No.
But also, I think it could just be, but here's the thing, because I've seen footage of childbirth.
Okay.
So maybe the magical amazement glow isn't caught on film per se.
Well, no, I'm sure it's not.
Because when I saw it, I just lost my mind. It just seemed like my butthole clenched up so tight. Like it just looks unnatural, painful, okay. And things are doing things they shouldn't do.
Now,
oh my God!
Now there are people who have that response. I mean, when I. They had a chair in there in case I felt faint or something.
Did you get an epidural?
No, I didn't get one, no.
Oh, because I'm sure that would have helped.
But there was a chair if I felt faint or anything, but none of that happened. And it was just, like I said, it was just It was like we weren't even. I it's hard to describe because it's not like anything you ever will experience, you know, anywhere else. It's like you were in a completely different time and place, and what's happening is so extraordinary, you know, so. So contrary to the way things naturally seem to work. Like, in the course of your life, you just get used to things falling apart, basically. You know, you get used to things wearing out. You get used to throwing things away because they get old and they're no good anymore, and you go buy something new. And you get used to going to funerals, right? I mean, but here is something completely different. It's like you are existing in a completely different world where nothing ever falls apart, nothing ever dies, nothing ever disintegrates. It's things only just, you know, I don't know. It's a transcendent experience, really, is what it is, or it was for me. And but you know, that's the only time that I've ever experienced anything like that. And of course, I've never had children of my own, so. So that's probably a good thing I experienced it then, because I was never going to experience it again.
That is beautiful, and I would totally make fun of it, but I don't have a good joke. So,
well, you asked me what it was like for me, and I'm being as honest as I can be, and I know I'm not doing it.
That's the problem, is a profound and beautiful and poetic statement you just made, and I'm not good at having jokes for that.
Well,
I could sing the Space Stallion song.
And, of course, this wasn't even my child. Of course, this is a stranger. She didn't know me. Afterwards, I talked to her, and she seemed to be very glad that I was part of that experience. And she named the child Patience. It was a girl. Because she didn't feel very patient at the time she was delivering the baby. but you know. She felt so blessed and excited and exhilarated, like I'm sure I felt. Well, you know, I can't compare our experiences, obviously. I'm sure what she felt was far beyond something, anything I could even imagine.
More tearing for her, I think.
Anyway, what I'm saying is that she named the child Patience because of what the experience meant to her, and I thought that was really cool. And, you know, somewhere out there, there's a little girl whose birth I went, who doesn't even know who I am, probably has never even been told the story that, oh, some kid watched your birth and he was really moved by it. You know, and she's out there somewhere living a life.
But we've brought her here tonight. Come on, Invasion! No. She's not here. Really.
No, I know. She's
okay,
not.
I will never
see this woman, no. Whoever she is.
Although, you should probably check. Every time you come across a woman younger than you named Patience, because there can't be that many of those.
From Kentucky. And, you know, I don't even know what her last name was.
I don't even think you got to cover that, because, like, how many can there be, really? Who gets named Patience?
I don't know. You know, I guess if I was still on Facebook after telling this story, I'd say, well, let me see how many Patiences are in Facebook and how many are from Manchester, Kentucky.
If I was going to have a kid, I might name the kid Patience. I would spell it Patience, though.
Okay.
Patience, like plural. And that would really confuse things.
You know, I seriously think this is the first time I've ever talked about this, like, since it happened.
That's really unfortunate for you that it's to me.
I mean, I might have told people that, oh yeah, I witnessed a birth while I was there, but nobody asked me like you
did
what that was
like. That's amazing to me, because I mean, I'm a jackass, so I'm making fun of it, but outside of that, how do people not be like, oh, you actually saw a baby, like, out of the thing? Like, at least be like, dude, what was that like?
Oh no, nobody's ever asked me that question, I don't think.
That's crazy.
I do kind of remember telling somebody that it was a pretty amazing experience or whatever, but that was kind of a, that's probably all I said, and it was sort of incidental. They didn't really ask. I've never had the opportunity to explain it like I did to you just now. I don't think.
And to our listeners, I don't think so. Be lucky, people. This is a first right here in all of the 43 years. First time. Enjoy it. It's our gift to you. From our home to yours, fresh every day. Sorry, I think I lapsed into a bread commercial or something.
There's a lot of things that happened that summer that I haven't talked about but, like, since then.
Witnessing... Well, no. I was going to say, witnessing birth is a very uncommon thing. But, I mean, I guess a lot of people nowadays, they either do it themselves.
Sure, sure.
Or witness their spouses because they get in there them. But still, I just think there's enough people out there that don't and won't. And it's a weird enough thing, at least, that you're going to be like, dude, what was that like?
Well, I think...
Because there's no way, when I find out that you did it, just there's no way I'm not going to ask you on the podcast or off the podcast. I mean, well, come on.
I think the real unusual thing about it is it was something I witnessed, and it wasn't anyone I knew.
Yeah, it was a stranger doing it.
And I'm sure it's a very different experience for someone when it's their child and whatever. Yeah. Or even a good, a close friend of theirs or whatever. I'm sure it's a very different experience.
Or a bitter, bitter enemy.
Well, I don't know. But that would be and weird. Of course, doctors or people who are training to be doctors, they, you know, whatever. But that's probably a very different experience for them. Here I am. I'm not a physician. I'm not related to this person. I'm also 17.
Yeah.
So that's probably...
And yeah, and you're not participating in the delivery process. So for you, it's just basically
actually,
art.
I think I might have done something.
You had to catch?
No. I don't remember.
You didn't cut the cord, did you?
No, I think I just... You know, I think when they asked me, you know, someone needed something, I was there to hand it to them, I think. I think I
might have
done
something. But mostly you're just sort of soaking up the ambiance here.
I guess. And it was not... It was a very standard, you know, classic delivery room delivery.
So nobody was, like, freaking out or breaching or...
Well, it wasn't like in
excessive bleeding or things going
off.
No.
Nothing was happening like that, and it wasn't in a place with carpeting and a special bed or
in a pool of lavender soap.
It was like a delivery room, but
it wasn't a C-section or nothing.
No, it was a delivery room. It was sterile, and it was...
I apparently in my mind have a lot of sound effects associated with birth that I don't know where they came from. I occasionally keep making these noises here, and I'm like, I don't know why I think it sounds that way.
The thing is, I don't remember a lot about, like, you know, I can't close my eyes and visualize everything that happened.
Which might be for the best.
What I remember is the emotions.
I think that's probably the part you want to take away from it. Because, again, have seen it on videotape, and that's not something you just want following around.
I can't imagine a videotape of it being anything, you know what I mean? It's like...
I do, because I saw it, and holy shit.
There's... It's not just about what's happening visually, of course. There's lots of things going on, and that you... I can't describe it. I can't imagine a video doing it any justice, and I can't imagine anyone doing that, by the way. Having experienced it, it almost feels like sacrilegious for someone to film it. I mean, except for educational purposes.
Well, which is what it was. It wasn't like we all got together for a...
I mean, for doctors, not for, like, high school health class even.
No, this was for a college course in sexuality, actually.
That might be all right. But like, I hear of people, like, ever since I had that experience, and I hear of fathers taking a video camera into...
I'm always just amazed that any woman's okay with that.
Well, I can understand that to a degree, because this woman was okay with me being there, and I understand why she was okay with me being there, and I can see that extending maybe to being taped. But it bothers me because something, and everyone has a different experience, I'm sure, but for me, something sacred happened there. And I know that sounds cliche and trite or whatever, but you know, anyone who's actually had any kind of transcendent or ecstatic experience, I'm sure understands what I'm talking about. And they know that, yeah, you don't just take a camera into some place like that. That's just not right.
I try and tape all of my transcendent and ecstatic experiences.
Okay.
But
you asked me, so I told you.
I
so there
did,
is.
And I'm glad you told me and our listeners.
No, you're not glad.
No, I am.
You don't care.
Johnny doesn't care.
You're like the honey badger.
So Tony doesn't give a fuck. Tony takes what he wants.
No, but that was an interesting... Well, you know, I already told you the story about the code blue. And
yes.
I also made a friend there, a woman who was... who had to have some procedure done. And then I went... I was... It was... My uncle lived in Manchester, Kentucky. I was staying with him.
Okay.
Understand. So But he went on vacation. He took me with him. And this was a woman I visited every day while she was in the hospital. And I was told that she would be fine or whatever. But, of course, when I get back from vacation and I go to look for her, she wasn't discharged like I expected she would be because she was fine. She'd actually passed away.
Oh, geez.
And, you know, that was the first experience I'd ever had. I mean, of course, I'd had relatives pass away. I mean, as you know, for my first experience with a relative passing away was when I was 2 years old. And I remember it very vividly. But this was the first time I had someone who wasn't related and wasn't like some old great uncle that I barely knew or anything like that. You know, she was an older lady, but she probably had a lot of good years left in her. And whatever was wrong with her, they couldn't fix it. And she passed away while I was gone. So that was kind of devastating. But needless to say, putting all my experiences together that summer, I'd wanted to be a doctor since as long as I could remember. And after that summer, I decided I didn't want to be. So because I didn't...
how I felt after MASH.
I didn't feel like I could steel myself against these things, you know what I mean?
Well, hell yeah.
I knew doctors did it, and I knew they should do it, but I just didn't... I wanted to feel bad that this woman had passed on. I wanted to feel bad for the woman whose husband died. When I saw a child being born, I wanted it to be a special, unique, sacred experience. I didn't want to get used to this and turn it into some common thing.
There is almost a dehumanizing sort of that has to happen in oneself.
Yeah.
To deal with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I understand it completely, but I just didn't want that to be me. So
that's sort of how I decided. A long time ago, I thought I might be a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and I realized. I mean, don't think I articulated it that well in my brain at the time, but the way I thought of it at the time is I thought, there's some mysteries here to the human mind that I'm not sure I actually want answered. I like the mystique of it.
Yeah.
And I want to still be, you know, impressed by all that stuff and not just... And I mean, and that's a thing, and it's not always a thing. There are people who know subjects on a very technical level that find it all the more amazing because of that.
Yeah, and I'm like that actually with most things in terms of being amazed by it, but it seems to me that when you're a health professional, and well, I think I'd feel the same way if I was a psychologist or a psychiatrist, where I would get emotionally invested in what's going on with my patients, and you just can't do that.
Yeah.
But I want to do that.
That's why I didn't want to be a podcaster at first, because you have to keep your listeners at a distance. And I was worried that I would grow too emotionally attached to my listeners, and I have. you remember in episode 4 or 3 or something where I said, I hate you guys?
Yeah. You know, I actually listened to the first episode the other day just to see
how bad was it?
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. We've grown.
In badness.
Well, yeah. But I don't...
We're not as bad as back then, but...
I love still, our listeners now.
Still bad.
Our listeners are beautiful, wonderful people with, they have such great qualities, and really their only flaw is their taste in podcasts.
I know.
Otherwise,
they could just get past that one thing.
But, and it's something that can ruin families, you know, destroy lives listening to this podcast, but we appreciate it all the same. And we love you guys. And we've seriously cashed almost half of this episode without a question. So we should probably do that.
Why are we getting into this rut of...
Because you and the chocolate, it makes you talk.
Oh, you're right, it does.
That's okay, though. I think it's going to prove that people are going to like this. But we'll have to see.
Because remember, you guys, I had chocolate before I came over tonight.
Yeah, remember a week ago, he had chocolate. Still... having an impact.
Yeah.
That was some good stuff.
I probably will have some chocolate on my birthday.
Today. It's your birthday. I mean, yeah, today, yes. Have some. Well, you already did, but it was a week ago. I'm so confused. Who's it from?
Kia B.
Kia B, my favorite of the Kias.
Dear the Magical Talking Hat, what is your favorite American cartoon series? Oh. Well, I don't think the hat has a favorite, but we probably do.
Yeah, but the hat probably does.
Oh, you think the hat has a favorite cartoon series?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Everybody has a favorite cartoon series.
Even the hat?
Of course. Huh. The hat is extremely opinionated about things.
Oh, I don't know if I do have a favorite cartoon series. My favorite cartoons are Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah.
That's not really a cartoon
series. We've talked about Last Airbender on here a fair bit.
Yeah.
I don't think that's my favorite American one, though.
That's boring, isn't it, that my favorite is Warner Brothers cartoons? Like, everybody's favorite is... I mean, everybody loves Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah, I think it's only boring in that everybody knows them already. Mm. So nobody's going to say, ooh, what's that like? You know, because they already know.
I'm so uninteresting.
And it's also weird to say American. I assume she means American as opposed to anime.
Probably.
But, yeah. like, could you count, say, Futurama? It's pretty much entirely drawn in Korea. actually, at this point, my favorite is probably Archer. Because it's just so hilarious. Oh, I can't help myself.
Well, Adult Swim cartoons are pretty funny.
Yes. No, that's from FX.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But yes, no, you're right, though. Like, Venture Brothers, also very, pretty very funny. Good.
Yeah.
But if we're talking, let's talk kids' cartoons.
Oh, well, when I was growing up, and, you know, Scooby-Doo was my favorite, and I have to say, for nostalgic, you know, value, I'm still a huge Scooby-Doo fan.
I have developed some sort of weird hatred of Scooby-Doo as I've gotten older, and I don't know why, because I liked Scooby-Doo growing up.
Yeah, that was absolutely my favorite.
Something has happened.
I liked other things, too, but that was my favorite for sure.
Maybe Gargoyles.
Now, see, that was kind of after my time, so I didn't see it very much. Oh, it
was mine, too, but I still watched it, and it had a tremendous impact on me because it was the first sort of kids show that I felt like really treated us seriously and had a serious overarching plot.
Oh, okay.
And, like, things happened and changed and stuff. And it was heavy duty.
Was it?
Yeah, that was the thing. It had a really involved, complex setup for the whole plot. I mean, for most of the time that it was on. It gave me my first functional and working model for time travel that I actually bought into that worked well. It had major emotional stuff of people who had been together and then they couldn't, like, it actually had people who could feel more than one emotion at the same time, you know. It was really interesting. I thought it was very cool. It pulled in a lot of Arthurian legend, and it pulled in the Illuminati, and it pulled in weird fairy stuff and Shakespeare. There was quite a bit of Shakespeare involved.
Huh.
Was very, very happy with it. It apparently went on after the series was done with a spin-off series called Gargoyles, the Goliath Chronicles, I think, which apparently was really fucking annoying.
Oh, that's true.
Because it basically became sort of a little kid version of it.
Oh.
And was not good, but I didn't ever... that was on just the Disney Channel, I think, and we didn't get that at the time. Oddly enough, because there's a channel way high up on the digital things called Kubo.
Okay.
And at nighttime, in overnight, it shows older kids' shows, like, from the 80s. And it'll show, like, He-Man and She-Ra and stuff like that.
Right.
Which do not hold up well at all.
Oh, yeah, I never got into them.
But you know what? For being an old cartoon series for kids, the thing that I think holds up remarkably well is Thundar the Barbarian.
Really?
I'm not saying it's good, but there's just a lot of... there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
It is not as generic and cliche as some of the other stuff.
What about Thundercats or anything like that?
Thundercats does not hold up well. I tried to watch, when we first got Netflix, they had all the Thundercats, and I'm like, oh my god, I should see this, because I don't even think I ever saw second season of Thundercats. So I was real excited, so I started from the beginning. I got through 6 episodes.
Pretty bad, huh?
It was pretty damn painful.
What about Space Ghost?
I never watched original Space Ghost.
Oh, you
so
just watched Space Ghost, Ghost,
Coast
Ghost.
Ghost and Cartoon Planet and all that kind of stuff.
We watched Space Ghost. See, my era of cartoon watchers, they were cartoons. They weren't toy commercials.
Yeah.
Like G.I. Joe and Transformers and all that other stuff was.
And He-Man. And yeah.
Really, so...
Voltron.
I mean, I can't think of any cartoon that we watched regularly before I stopped sort of watching cartoons that you could even... We would have loved it if they sold toys for, like, Scooby-Doo toys and a little mystery machine and stuff. That would have been awesome, but they didn't. I mean, they didn't even think about it like that for some reason.
They did sell toys for Black Star.
Well, I don't even know what that
Black
is.
Remember Black Star?
No.
It was the major competition against Thundar the Barbarian.
So why did it take so long for them to figure out, hey, we can sell toys? I mean, it was like, not only did they figure out they could sell toys, but the cartoons themselves became just commercials for the toys. It's not like there was even any middle ground. It's like, well, here we have cartoons, and we don't even tie them to toys. And here are cartoons that aren't only there, they tied to toys, but selling the toy seems to be the whole point of it.
Odds are we can tie it to specific economic trends and families having disposable income so that kids could actually have toys.
Yeah, but they were advertising. They did have advertising focused on kids during the cartoons of other toys and cereals. So why wouldn't they have been selling toys that actually tied into the show?
Some genius. Or maybe they had the toys, just not in Melcher Dallas. They didn't make it that far.
Well, I mean, the toys they sold back then were pretty cool. I mean, I had a Green Machine, and that was awesome. There was no cartoon for Green Machines.
Found out years later it gave you cancer, but...
It didn't give me cancer.
No, not you. People. You just haven't found it yet. It'll happen.
Oh.
Green Machine is... That's why they call it the Green Machine. It turns your insides green.
Oh. No, it's green.
Inside.
Whatever.
Green. No, Black Star was a great ripoff for Thundar. It was an astronaut who ended up on this planet and walked around looking kind of like a barbarian for some reason. And he had friends, and he was trying to protect the world from an evil overlord type guy. And there was this awesome sword called the Power Star that had gotten broken into two, a la He-Man, and was the Power Sword and the Star Sword. And the bad guy had one, and our hero had one. And yeah, they had toys for that, because I had the toys for that.
Oh.
And he had, it was a lot, kind of a He-Man ripoff. And he had his little friends. He had one guy that was like a shapeshifter. And he had one girl, you know.
You know what did it? You know what changed it?
What changed it?
I just figured it out.
What is it?
Well, George Lucas.
Yes.
When he made Star Wars.
Yes.
Had the foresight to make sure that he had certain licenses for the films. And Fox or whoever was distributing it or whoever he made his deal with, they didn't care because before then, that licensing wasn't such a big deal for movie makers. Then he turned around and he did merchandising for Star Wars, and that's when all of Hollywood realized, oh my God, there's a huge money to be made in licensing for this stuff. Why don't we make a cartoon that's basically a big commercial and just have all the licensing. So it was George Lucas who first did it. Who first knew to do it.
Why do all my revelation noises make me sound like a very angry, generic Frankenstein's monster?
I don't know, but...
Fire bad!
So far, this is really a theory, but I'll bet if you research it, you'll find it's true.
I think you might be onto something, because we, you know, he is... Like, George Lucas isn't a particularly good filmmaker... But
a shrewd businessman.
He is a brilliant merchandiser and always has been.
I do know that the reason he had those rights was because nobody else knew that they were valuable.
I knew that. That's sort of out there. Yeah, that they gave him those rights because they're like, who the hell cares?
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, toys. There were toys for Star Wars right away.
And
now that I'm thinking about it, I can't think of any film before that that had toys associated with it like that. And I guess the cartoons weren't like that either. But after he did it, wow. Then everybody knew they had something. It was Lucas. Someone can do research on it and prove me wrong.
You never saw the Green Machine cartoon?
There wasn't a Green Machine cartoon.
Wouldn't that have been awesome?
Most people had big wheels, see?
I had a big wheel. But I had several big wheels.
I had a Green Machine.
I had a fleet of... Well, I didn't really. They were consecutive, not
You
confirmed.
Were a big wheel... pirate. You had a patch over one eye. You'd ride around and you'd find other kids with big wheels and knock them over and steal what was in their little thing in the back, their little cargo thing, their sandwiches or whatever.
No, and I would take the whole big wheel.
Oh, the whole big wheel.
Yes,
because
I would steal it because you need those on the high sidewalks. But here's the funny thing. So I knock it over. I take the kid's big wheel.
Yeah.
And then I pay a pittance, really.
Mm.
a share of the loot to this big, nasty, Cockney-accented sailor to ride around on the big wheel. And he wouldn't even fit.
Huh.
And I don't even remember where I got these guys, because eventually I had like 15 guys.
Oh, wow.
That I was paying to. You'd think maybe just get the kids involved, but I had actual pirate sailors on the big wheel.
But you were the one doing the pirate work.
Well, eventually, no, I'd stand back and be like, I've asked
you. Oh, I see.
I'd get my boys to do it for me eventually.
And so you were the Commodore, pirate Commodore exactly, of the fleet.
Exactly, pirate Commodore of my fleet.
Of your big wheel
big
fleet.
Big wheel fleet. Yes.
That would have been something to see.
I mostly patrolled the sidewalks around the Dutch East Indies because there was not a lot of law enforcement around there.
Not only that, but those kids had some pretty sweet stuff in
there. Absolutely.
Little spices.
And, and bananas and silks.
That's really interesting because
cocoa beans.
You know, a few years ago, not only did the kids that I live in a house with have big wheels, but, you know, they went out and found big wheel wrecks that some of them still had the stuff in them, and they, you know, salvaged some of those treasures. It was great.
They went and salvaged?
Sure,
from
salvaged.
Big wheel wrecks?
Well, you know, guys like you left quite a bit of...
well, eventually I had to settle down, but...
Well, but
some of the guys, like in Somalia, still keep up the big wheel piracy.
But you left a mess. And some of the... You didn't always pick the
things. So is there like a
clean.
Big wheel junkyard? Where the... It's not no, like it's just by the side of the road you found big wheel
Well, in
homes.
Ditches and...
Seriously?
And in gullies and... You know, the sandwiches aren't any good anymore, but, you know, sometimes they have some pretty cool toys in there.
You're seriously, like...
And of course, the parts are still good.
You're totally... So, you're full of shit, aren't you?
This big wheel... Look, you had big wheel pirates, you have big wheel treasure hunters. That's how the cycle works.
Because I seriously thought, like, they're finding them, like, in the old garage or something like that. And, oh, that may be the best lie you've ever told. Because I actually bought it.
Who said it was a lie? Whatever. We should probably draw another one. Are we out of time already?
No, no, we're not that bad yet.
Good.
ditches and gullies. For those of you not watching
Culverts.
At home... I only figured it out because he couldn't help grinning eventually.
At the bottom of ponds that have dried up a little bit, you'll find one in there.
No, it's at the bottom of sidewalk depressions. We didn't go in the water with them. Oh, they would float.
Yeah.
Because everything
there wasn't
was hollow.
As long as there wasn't a kid in them.
Do you remember a big wheels? Like, you have these giant black tires that are just the strongest looking things ever until you, like, skid out a few times and you discover that they're approximately an eighth of an inch thick
and
just
hollow.
Totally
yep.
hollow.
That's right.
That was always a great disappointment as a child.
Well.
Okay, this is from Blood Sparrow.
Yay.
She says, are you happy now?
No.
But the chocolate.
Well, that helped, but no, not happy.
I'm happy because I lost 10 pounds.
Yeah, I'm happy about that.
Not again this week, people. Like, it's not another 10 pounds since, no, it's the same 10 pounds. Remember, same night for us, for you later, same weight, but still.
No, not happy, sorry.
So I'm okay. And... I'm happy. GammaCon this weekend. Starting tomorrow.
In their time or our time?
Our time.
Oh.
Like, by the time they hear this, GammaCon will be over. So ask me how GammaCon was.
How was GammaCon?
Awesome.
Oh, okay, good.
I'll tell you more details in a week for some reason.
And you met all these people.
I did, except I did not meet Verimond.
Oh.
Not because he wasn't there, but because I chose not to. No, but he can't make it for some reason. But
won't that be something if something happens and he can suddenly be there and now...
That would be weird.
The show, a week later, will say you didn't see him, but when you did, and then we're going to have to wait another week. Wow, this gets complicated.
Yes, stay tuned to see how it ends. No, of listeners of the podcast, I believe I will be meeting Useless Trivia Man and Azure Talon. That might be it.
Oh.
Of Happy Jack's people, I'm also meeting Not Inflatus. Gandalf the Plaid, Jimto, and that might be. I'm gonna meet other people associated with the Quad Cities crew, but I don't know the name of our listeners to this or active on the forums for Happy Jacks, so I don't know. So I'm going to meet them. And it's tomorrow, like, I'm taking a half day tomorrow. Wow. I'm going to go down there in the afternoon and just sort of screw around.
Tomorrow, and not then, the 17th.
No, not the
tomorrow, 10th. The 10th.
And then at 4 o'clock will be my first actual game tomorrow night. I have three games I'm actually signed up for to play. And one's at 4 o'clock tomorrow, and one is noon or 1 on Saturday, and one's at 11 on Sunday. So I've got them nice and spaced out. And my friends Dan and Lisa are going to be there. Lots of people I know are going to be there. But they're going to be playing in the same games I'm playing in, at least some of them. So that should be fun.
Sounds like fun. So you are happy now.
I'm happy now.
And when you're happy, I'm happy.
And when you're happy and I'm happy, the police start to wonder. Which is not a bad plan, police, but you will never find the bodies, so
nope.
You can stop trying.
Just old, broken down big wheels.
That hide the secrets. Look in the tires. They're hollow.
We're going to make a documentary where the cameras slowly move over the body of the big wheel.
At what point did the original big wheel have the adjustable seat?
I think so.
Because to me that seems like a fat American issue. But it probably wasn't. It was probably just a long-legged kid.
No, we want issue. Kids of many ages to be able to ride it.
Okay.
I can ride a Green Machine, by the way, even now.
That's weird.
Well, Green Machines were sort of made for an older kid.
Yeah, but you're kind of huge. I mean, vertically.
Well, I know, and I can ride one. That's how great they were and are. Although I don't know if they're still making them. Because they made them again, as you know, for a little while, and I don't know if they're making them anymore.
You should collect them from eBay.
Well, we do have three of them still.
You have three Green Machines?
Yeah.
Why do you have three?
Because we had three children who wanted one, and...
And they couldn't take turns?
Well, they probably could have, but the fun was in riding them together.
A Green Machine convoy.
Yeah.
You realize they were probably into piracy.
Oh, no, I didn't really think about
that. Yeah, yeah. They told you they were just merchants, but, yeah.
They told me they were treasure hunters.
Yeah.
And I was there when we found some of the big wheel wrecks. I just told you about that. But
yes,
they were probably causing a few wrecks, too.
They did that, and then they'd come back and get you, and then be like, why is this big wheel smoking?
Come to think of it, they often did have a lot more doubloons than I would have expected.
You don't expect that many doubloons from a kid.
Well, from, like, one or two wrecks is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, just in general, for children growing up in Iowa.
That's right.
Doubloons, not a lot. Yeah.
So you're right. They probably, you know, I didn't even think about that until just now. You're probably right.
Yeah.
They had these doubloons. They thought, we're going to have to explain these doubloons. And they said, hey, Rex.
There we go.
Yeah. He'll believe that we found all these doubloons in a wreck. And I did. I was so stupid.
Yeah. And now they basically run Vegas.
And they won't even take care of me in my old age.
Yeah. Didn't you ever wonder when they said never ask me about my business?
No. Well, because, you know, it's like I didn't want them to ask me about my business.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't really have any business to be asked about.
That's true, because I ask you about your business all the time.
It was just a matter of principle.
Okay, do another question.
I figured it was just principle for them, too. They're kids, you know?
Kids don't have principle.
Blood Sparrow again!
Are we happy still? No. What does this say?
When I go through a yellow light, I still kiss my fingers and touch the roof of the car. What random superstitious act do you find yourself still doing out of habit? I've never even heard of that one.
I haven't either. I think that's her own special crazy. Do you have any?
No. With the exception maybe of, like, saying bless you or Gesundheit or whatever, because technically that is a superstitious thing.
Yeah, it is technically.
But I don't really do it for superstitious reasons, it's kind of now polite to do it.
Other I do it that, because there is a joke from a TV show that I like that I keep trying to use.
Okay.
There was an opening joke from an episode of Mad About You where... Did I mention we got a new scratching pad for the kitties that they really like?
Well, good.
Where Helen Hunt sneezes and Paul Reiser says, "Bless you." And she sneezes again and he says, "Bless you." She sneezes again and he says, "Bless you." And she sneezes a fourth time and he says, "That's it, you're on your own." And I like this, so I use this when people sneeze. And I don't get to use it a lot because they have to sneeze four times for me to get to that point.
Four times.
But I do that. But, yeah, that's sort of the only reason I do bless you.
But, you know, I don't throw salt over my shoulder if I spill it or... I don't even knock on wood. I mean, I just don't do those things.
I don't knock on wood unless somebody says knock on wood. I do still throw salt over my shoulder, which I find weird. I don't know if this counts as a superstition. In my younger pagan-y days in college, I developed this thing where I have a pentacle that I still wear to this day that whenever I saw roadkill, I would take the pentacle and kiss it. And it was basically, I was saying a little prayer for whatever the little animal was. And I didn't actually say a full, you know, it was just, I would just sort of think it, you know, and say. And I believed in the concept that frequently magic works when you stop remembering why. And so you go through an elaborate process, but it has to be done by the subconscious. So when you're thinking about it, you screw it up. And so I did this in the belief that sort of would come about. And it was purely an ostentation thing. It was so I could sort of, you know, tell myself I was doing something deep and exciting and magical or whatever. But it's become a thing. Not only do I still do it... And I sort of do it, I've broadened the situation when there's cars by the side of the road, when the cops are going somewhere, when I hear sirens, I do it. And if I don't have my pentacle on, I just kiss my hand there. But it's to the point that I do it all the time by reflex now. And so I really have forgotten about it. So maybe now it really works. But that, I don't know if it's a continued superstition. It's just become such a habit that I have been in cars with people who don't know I do that. And we pass like a dead animal and I do that. And they're like, "What was that?" And I'll say, "What was what?" Because I honestly don't know what they're talking about. So I do have that one and I do throw the salt. For a while I held on to the stepping on a crack issue and breaking my mom's back. I did eventually get rid of that one. Superstitions. I do have another one. We have... When I got my first apartment, I think it was out of a Happy Meal. It was a Men in Black toy, and what it was a weird little alien thing with a brain in its stomach. It was just a little plastic action figure. And it ended up in my kitchen, on my kitchen sink. And it sort of became the patron saint of my kitchen sink. And I would always try and keep it clean and keep it standing upright and that kind of thing. Hey, what are you kitties doing?
I don't think they're happy with each other.
What's going on?
I don't know. I don't see them.
Twiglet may have seen a cat outside. When that happens, he turns really jerky.
Oh.
He goes kind of crazy. Anyway, and it made its way to the other place I live, and it's still here now. It's the kitchen alien. And I try and keep it standing upright and, you know, not messy and stuff like that so that it will look fondly on our dishes.
Okay.
Also, the freaking matzah you won't let me throw away.
Oh, the matzah! The Jehovah brought the matzah farfel. In one of my moving house, a box of Matsu appeared. I have never purchased Matsu. I've never lived with anybody who owns or uses it. Nobody knows where it came from. It was a blessing from Jehovah. And so we keep it.
Well, I have a story about a superstition, but I don't know if I remember it well enough to tell the story very well. When we worked for that software support place we worked for, and I had a customer who would call me often with computer problems. She also had a problem selling her house.
Okay.
And when people are having trouble selling their house, they're supposed to bury a statue of a saint. And this is the part I don't remember. Saint John? Have you ever heard this?
No, not at all. Okay, but well, a particular saint.
Someone can remind me who this saint is.
All our Catholic listeners.
But you bury the, and I believe you bury it upside down, head first, in your yard, in the yard of the house that you're trying to sell, and that it'll eventually sell.
Head first, okay.
So she told me she tried this, and it wasn't working. So I told her, and this was weird because, you know, I hadn't normally supported, like, a supernatural or superstitious call, just computer issues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But here I'm going to troubleshoot.
Oh, to be fair, I'd seem to recall some superstitions in trying to fix.
That's computers. That's right.
Computer, but anyway.
But here I'm going to I'm doing support for superstitious or supernatural whatever, and so I tell her,
is the statue fully patched up?
No, I don't think there's a problem with that.
Was it a statue that we support? I mean,
I asked. Is it Y2K
compliant?
But what I told her was, now she lived in Wisconsin, and I said, well, what you probably need to do is pour a libation on it of beer, for example. Since you're in Wisconsin, right?
Or cheese.
Or pretty close to Milwaukee. Just try a libation, and we'll see if that helps. And
she got confused and did this on her computer.
No.
Okay.
She did exactly as I instructed her with some Milwaukee brand of beer. And, like, the very next day, she got an offer.
Ooh.
Yeah. So.
You should have gone into, like, the feng shui business.
I know. I thought to myself, wow, I'm really good at this, but I never really pursued it. I should have.
There was a call in that same company. This was a little before my time, but I got the story of a person who had a problem with the books being out of balance in the accounting portion.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day they were back. They ran the same reports and they were in balance. And they said, how did this happen? And the tech had no idea. And the tech was joking. Because this was being overheard. And the tech was saying, well, on your way to work today, you hit accidentally a chicken with your car. And so now they're in balance. If it had been a squirrel, they would still be out of balance. And then there's a pause. And it says, ma'am, I'm kidding. I have no idea why.
I think I know who that was.
And he swears that the time he could, like, almost hear the person on the other end writing down, like, chicken equals balance.
Well, there's a lot of superstition involved in, like you said, in computer troubleshooting. But no, she had a completely different problem, and I helped her. So I probably should have gone into that business.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, as I said, I don't have any. I know quite a bit about superstitions and practices. Like, I could tell her, hey, try a libation. But I don't have any really myself. Any at all.
Well, maybe if you pour a libation on yourself, then we're in Iowa, so cream corn. Okay, I have a joke for you.
Okay.
So this guy...
This guy or this guy?
This guy.
Okay, I got it.
This guy is up overhead. No, this guy, this person, moves out to the country and buys farmland.
Okay.
He buys a couple thousand acres.
Wow. Really? Wow.
Yes. And he's just going to, you know, start farming. He's done with the city life, and he's going to start farming.
Okay.
And...
I mean, I suppose there's a lot of farms that big nowadays, but usually you don't start with 1,000.
Well, he's one of those, like, he made a bunch of money in the city, and now he's going to do it. And so he goes to the local, you know, farm supply place, and he says, what does well around here?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, well, chickens do pretty well around here. And the guy says, okay, how many chickens should I get for a couple thousand acres? And the guy says, see, I'm talking to a farm boy, so give me a good number. How many chickens you support on a couple thousand acres?
Well, you don't need a couple thousand acres for really any size number. I mean, most chicken operations that have a lot of chickens have them in these confinements, and it's like all on...
I know, but let's say that's not happening.
These are going to be like free range over 2,000 exactly acres of chickens. I have no idea.
You're ruining my joke.
Nobody would ever do it like that.
So the guy says, okay, give me like 20,000 chickens.
20 chickens.
Per acre.
Per acre. Yes. Okay.
And the guy says, okay, and he gives him 20,000 chickens.
Jeez, where does he get 20,000 chickens?
It takes a while.
Okay.
it takes a while to get there.
There are outfits that will have that many chickens.
Yes, and this is one of them.
Okay. No, not to sell. I mean, well, not to sell to a one person. Like farms might
You've
have
heard
that many.
Tyson Farm in confinements. And Fleet. It's Tyson Chicken.
Okay.
Same people. They just spell it differently. Anyways, so I give
you can
some...
buy chicks at Tyson's. Did you know that?
I hate you.
You can. And little ducklings,
I
too.
I also hate you. I'm telling
my joke.
I mean,
live ones.
I'm telling my joke. So the guy gets 20,000 chickens. They have to import them from Panama, but he gets them eventually. And
from Panama?
Then he comes back, and the guy says, I need another 30,000 chickens. And the guy thinks, this seems like a lot.
20,000 didn't?
30... Well, not for 2,000 acres, but now, you know.
Oh, right. I forgot. Free-range 20,000 acre chickens.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this will work. And so he gets him 30,000. And then the guy comes back a couple weeks later, and he says, I need another 50,000 chickens. And he says, sir, like, I know you're new at this. I don't know that your land is... going to support all of these chickens. It's too many chickens. And a guy looks at him and says, well, either I'm planting them too shallow or too deep, but they just ain't growing.
I could see that coming from a mile away.
Then why did you have
the 1,000 acre farm was way funnier.
I hate farming people.
Well,
I heard this
joke.
Who
taught you this joke?
In sixth grade in Oregon.
Did you tell it exactly as you heard it? A couple thousand acres?
I don't remember. I think so. We were sixth graders, and none of us had seen a chicken farm.
Maybe telling the joke, you need to avoid how many acres it is, because that's really
irrelevant. It's supposed to matter, because it's supposed to seem like a lot of chickens for that acreage, so that you sympathize.
I don't know anyway.
Because the way you're supposed to say is there's no way your land can possibly hold that many chickens.
There's no way you can farm a farm that big.
See?
Well, you can nowadays, but it's like takes a long time. You have to have huge equipment. And nowadays, you know, 1,000 acre businesses are pretty common.
People of the interwebs.
You didn't grow up on farms in the Midwest.
If you live in a city away from farmers, tell this joke. It's a funny joke. But don't tell farm people. I'm surrounded by farm people here.
And tell people that we tip cows for entertainment. Tell them that, too, because people in the city believe it.
Absolutely. But don't also make the farm smaller. Because that's a problem. Apparently.
There might be things I don't know about raising chickens, because as far as I know, when you raise chickens, okay, you either have a huge outfit where you have them in some confinement and that's just these buildings and the buildings could cover a few acres, or you have a couple coops where the chickens are, you know what I'm saying? There's no whatever your acreage is for your farm, that's you're going to plant crops. Now, you might use some of it as pasture for cows or whatever, but you don't pasture chickens.
Well, you also don't plant chickens. That's supposed to be the joke, that he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, but the farm guy would, if he said, well, I have a couple thousand acres, what do I do with these chickens? He would go, "What? That's a couple thousand, doesn't matter. What is your, are you opening a chicken farm? Or, and if he says, yeah, I'm going to have a chicken farm, he'd say, well, what you need is you need a building, and you need, that building has to be outfitted a certain way, and that might take maybe 5 or 6 acres for you to have some huge buildings, and then you might have several thousand chickens.
Why
Except
do
for
you...
the fact that if you acquired a several thousand acre farm, no one would talk to you, because A, you would have bought all their land. And they would also be really, really mad.
Well, yeah, because most people who have several acres that they're farming have bought it from several people over a long period of time. They've incorporated, probably. They have several people working for them, and they have huge equipment. They would never walk into a farm place and say, hey, what do I do with a couple thousand acres? That guy would say, you must be some kind of idiot.
Why do you guys hate humor? Why?
Because my grandparents are spinning in their graves as we speak.
Hop along, thanks. Thought that joke was hilarious.
Now, oh, here's a way to tell the joke.
Tell you.
When the guy goes to the farm, like to Tyson's or whatever it is, and he says, hey, I got a couple thousand acres and I want chickens, what do I do? If part of the joke was that this guy knew that this guy must be a total moron because we got a couple thousand acres and chickens. So, as a joke, the guy says, oh, yeah, you'll need about 10,000 chickens. And the guy buys the 10,000 chickens, and he laughs about it and thinks, man, this guy's an idiot. But then the guy comes back to buy more chickens, and he's kind of baffled by it. And then that would make it funnier.
It gets a little meta then.
Well, it makes more sense.
It's a joke within a joke at that point.
Because you're already setting the guy up to be a real moron, and maybe the guy at the farm and home place knows he's a moron.
Maybe I should just make the farm smaller.
Yeah, that's
well, that funny. Might help, but still, I don't.
Why do you guys hate
nobody's
laughter?
Nobody thinks about, like, if someone buys a farm that's got 150 acres, you might think of how much you can plant or how many cattle you can have for pasturing cattle, but you're not going to think of how many chickens you could have to pasture chickens. Not that I know.
You could have them plant cows.
I have told this joke dozens of times.
Well,
in my life.
Maybe there's something I don't know.
And
about
only
this, but
you
I'm pretty
assholes.
Sure I know.
I've
ever
heard you tell this joke, and I don't think you usually say couple of thousand acres.
I can't be remembering numbers. I have things to do.
Now, oh, well, there is an acreage that would make sense to me if it was like 10 acres, maybe. 5 acres, even better.
All right.
But not 150 or
so
100 acres.
This guy moves out to the country, and he buys like 5 acres of land.
That would be.
And he goes to the farm supply place, and he says, "What grows good around here? What does good around here?" And the
okay, but
says,
see that you can't say that either.
I can't say what does good what, around here.
Well, because they're not going to think of livestock. I mean, unless he's asking about livestock, they're going to, you know, if he says,
if
"I've got 5 acres and I want to know what grows good around here,"
but if he specifies that he's talking about livestock, then he's not going to plant them.
Which, how do you know?
Is the joke.
What does good around here? Well, the guy might say chickens.
He did. I was there.
This is not a very good, very well-crafted joke.
I've never had a problem with this joke before. I've told this joke many times.
Well, you know, it might be something I'm missing about all of this, that someone who also has grown up a farm could say, oh, no, that's something... You know, that's funny or whatever.
I don't think it is. I think you people who grew up on farms are the ones ruining my joke.
I'm sorry. It just that didn't make sense to me. And if it doesn't make sense, how can it be funny? Or something. I don't know.
So we're way over an hour at this point. So
I'm sorry.
Do you want to thank our peoples?
Well, Blood Sparrow and Kia B. Thank
what
you.
What was the other one?
There were two Blood Sparrows, yeah.
Oh, there were two Blood Sparrows, okay. Yeah. I missed three questions in an hour, on the second hour podcast.
I'm sorry about your joke.
Chatty people. Well,
I feel bad about your joke.
Everybody write in to the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with topics for us, please. We like them. Doesn't have to be a lot. Just something. And go to the blog at themagicaltalkinghat.com. Talk with other people there. Talk with the producer. The producer's been going there a little bit more lately to cause some trouble. Go check that shit out. Like us on Facebook. That Magical Talking Hat is on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at not quite Tony. You can follow William too, but he don't ever tweet, so don't worry about that. And we will talk to you 2 weeks for us, next week for you. Okay?
Episode 50 next week.
Episode 50. Big 5-0. The golden anniversary. So I have to get you a gold-plated pork chop, and you have to get me a gold-plated carrot.
Right, that's right. Now, you're going to have me over again, right? I mean, I screwed up your joke, and I feel bad. And I don't want you to hate me.
I'll be okay after I have a good cry.
Okay.
But
you'll forgive me, right?
Yeah, we're going to be all right, but I need some time to process this.
I'm sorry.
All right. Good night, everybody. Still laughing at me.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.